Today's episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by TrueCar. There's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. You could use TrueCar to help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get that upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price and a better buying experience through the TrueCar certified dealer network. There's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. You'll be able to see what other people pay for the car that you want, so you know what a fair price is and you can feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing to enjoy a quick, easy car buying experience. Using TrueCar, you'll easily find the new or used car that you want. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we've got a double feature for you here on the podcast. We have two interviews for you today, two great segments that we have for you in one show. First today, we're going to check in with AJ Mass and go through our 13 archetypes of the Survivor season. Like Ciara Dawn Thomas, always a fan favorite, so I will be talking first with AJ Mass, and then we will also have David Bloomberg back to discuss why Jeff Varner lost. I know a lot of people are saying, wait, hold on a second. I think we all know how Jeff Varner lost. No, we're not going to talk about the tribal council in terms of what happened with Jeff Varner, because that basically we're going to just play along that Jeff Varner had already lost the game by the time he got to the tribal council. But what went on in the 16 and three quarter days leading up to that point in Jeff Varner's game, that's what we're going to talk about here with David Bloomberg. So if you want to skip ahead in the show notes, I'll have the time codes for if you want to skip ahead to David or come back to AJ. That's going to all be there for you in the listings in your podcatcher or on robhasawebsite.com. So stay tuned for that. First, here's my conversation with AJ Mass. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to get back into a tradition almost as longstanding as anything else we do on Rob Has a Podcast. When we get down to 13 players in Big Brother and in Survivor, we welcome in this man that he is the author of How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. And yes, it's hot in here, from ESPN, the great AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
Good, Rob. How are you doing, sir?
Very good, AJ. And of course, even better now that you are back with us here on RHAP.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, although this is a season of game changers, I think our game in terms of doing this archetype thing has remained the same. Yeah, exactly.
We've been doing this the same way for, 11 Survivor seasons now at this point. So, yes, this will remain the same. No major twists or anything of the sort to date, but who knows what could be coming down the road.
Well, I do have 17 immunity idols that I found, so perhaps I'll be playing them at some point and doing a triple vote to vote you out or something like that. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we will be on the lookout for any sort of curves or right turns that we don't see coming. But AJ, so how's everything going in your world?
It's going well. It's going well. We got baseball season has started. We're kicking off week three today of the baseball season, and you know the Mets don't look horrible. They don't look fantastic.
Boy, they looked really good as of Thursday night.
Yeah, but you know weekend. What? You know, Juris Familia's not back yet, which is going to change that bullpen a little bit. So I'm not concerned. As long as we're scoring runs, I'm not concerned.
Okay. Well, yeah, this was a very, very rough couple of games down in Miami, but very few people want to hear us talk about this. And what they do want to hear about is the Survivor Game Changers and the archetypes. And so, AJ, just to sort of set the stage for what we're about to do, you, once upon a time, in your first book, The How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, you described 13 different archetypes of people that would be in a perfect fantasy league or any sort of league. You compared it to the Apostles and not Tyson. And this is where we are now. We have a description of what those are on robhasawebsite.com. And now we're going to go through the remaining 13 players, and you will make this puzzle work once again with all these players. And people like to play along and guess what you're going to say.
Yeah, it's a fun way, a different way of looking at kind of the archetypes. You know, Angie Counts usually comes on with you and does some sort of, you know, preview of the season with like the types of personalities. I know she's done that in the past, of the types of people who are cast on the show. This has nothing to do with who they are in terms of the casting sense, but the interaction sense and how they interact with each other on the show. And generally speaking, the players fill these roles in terms of interaction, and it kind of puts a seeding in terms of who, which role is most likely to win. There can be upsets, and often are. That's why we watch. But generally speaking, you know, Fresh Meat's going to be the least likely seed going in, and you know, The Diplomat's going to be the number one seed going in, and you know, we see where it plays out when the tournament is over.
And sometimes better than others. And then we'll do a draft at the end, like we like to do. And do you remember, have any recollection over who won that one?
Rob, I barely remember by the time we've finished the podcast, quite frankly, because as much fun as I have doing it, it tends to be like, you know, either you destroy me by running the table or I destroy you by having the final five. I don't know that we've had too many close calls here. I think it's usually been an all or nothing blowout.
I'm going to see if I can find the draft standings by the time we get to that point in the podcast. Okay. So, AJ, did you want to jump right into the archetypes, or did you want to talk about anything else in particular?
I just wanted to offer up a personal view that I had on the whole Varner-Zeke situation. I'm not going to belabor it because I know it's been talked to death, but there was one angle that I hadn't heard yet discuss, and it was one of the ones that I immediately thought of in the aftermath of that tribal council that I just thought I'd throw out there just, you know, to get out in the universe for people to mull over, if that's okay with you, sir.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, now, you know, certainly going into the episode, I had seen on Twitter that something was going to happen in terms of Zeke being outed as transgender, but I didn't know who. So that's kind of where I was watching the episode from. And I must say that when I found out it was Varner, I was disappointed. I think that's the word that really hit me more than anything else. You know, of all people on this cast, I think he was the one that I was most surprised would have gone down this route. So there is nothing I want to say in defense of what he did. I think it was absolutely, you know, wrong on every level. I'm very proud of the way everybody else at Tribal Council reacted so vehemently and immediately. You know, all of that being said, I do think that Survivor's environment over recent history may have played into this. And I just wanted to throw this out there as a way of perhaps, you know, we're all asking how could Varner even for a minute consider doing something like this? And I just think the current environment of the game of Survivor played into this a little bit. You know, we had the last two winners, you know, we had Jeremy winning with this big secret that he reveals at the final tribal. Like, you know, I didn't tell all of you, and most of you don't know this, but Val's pregnant, having a baby, and that personal real life thing kind of, I think he still would have won, but it seemed to have an impact, and a lot of fans think it had an impact on that final tribal council. And, you know, now we go into, you know, what happened with, you know, from Zeke season. And even though Varner didn't see it, I'm sure if he spent that much time talking to Zeke, it might have come up and he was aware of it. So we're talking about Jeff Varner's last season and the season that just happened. A personal, real world revelation at Tribal Council was seen by many as tipping the scales and influencing the final result. Mm-hmm. So with that as the backdrop of this situation, I can understand that if Jeff knows, and I don't know how he knows that, you know, if he was guessing or if Zeke told him, I can't imagine that.
Zeke did not tell him.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how he knew and where he got that from.
It's a very good question, AJ.
And that to me is something I would like to know. But just as an observer, I would think that using that as a weapon to try and you know, preemptively get that out there, if he thought it was out in the and people were aware of it, I at least can understand how it might enter gameplay. I don't think it is as oh my gosh, how could you bring the real life into the game? I think Survivor has brought the real life into the game in terms of who wins and who loses. And while I still go on record as saying I would not have done that, I am disappointed in, with him for doing it, and I really don't see a defense of Jeff Varner making this revelation, given that he should have understood the ramifications. I do kind of see where, in the heat of the moment and in the game, because Survivor has become this kind of real life, does influence the results. I can kind of see why the idea came into his head in the first place. He still should have dismissed it, I think, but I do give him some sympathy in the sense that that's probably why the idea jumped in there at all. And I just hadn't heard anyone say that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that's something to consider, considering you know, where we are in the game right now.
No, I definitely understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, Jeremy having a big reveal at the Final Tribal Council and Adam Klein having a big reveal at the Final Tribal Council. But just a couple of things to respond to that.
Sure.
That Jeff did not seem as though his point was, hey, guys, I need to let you know something. Zeke, why haven't you told anybody that you're trans? That's so amazing. Who's not going to give you the money at the end of the game? You guys, if you don't vote him out today, he's going to reveal that to everybody. And then this is going to be something that you'll wish you got rid of him. Almost like Nyanka with Kelly Bruno. She has one leg. That's amazing. I have to get rid of her because who's going to not give her the money if she gets there? That's not what he was saying. So I don't think that was necessarily his motive. And then two, even if it was like a situation like last season where Adam was dealing with the, you know, tragedy with his mom, he did tell Jay, if Jay went to a tribal council and blew up Adam's spot like that, he's like, hey, everybody, just so you know, Adam's mom has cancer. And I like, it would have been a very similar reaction, be like, hey, screw you. That's not your secret to tell everybody. Like, what are you trying to do? That's not right. So I just think that on both counts, that if that was what he was thinking, it was a very bad plan. And if that is what he was going for, does not sound like that's what he was going for.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that's what he was going for there. And absolutely. In terms of the if the cancer spot had blown up, I actually don't think that's the same thing, because we saw him tell somebody. If you're going to tell somebody, then there's a chance that's different.
Yeah, I'm saying that it's the same, that people I think would have been very upset to have sort of like the violation of, you know, a real life situation going on.
Right.
It's not a privacy issue like Zeke being transgender, but it is certainly a violation of trust about something that's a super serious topic.
Sure, and it's how you spin it, and it's everything like that as well. I mean, it's a far cry from Penner blowing up, you know,
right,
Lisa Welchel's spot. Hey,
did you guys know that this is Blair you're talking to right now?
It's a very special tribal council. Obviously there's levels here, and like I said, this in particular was a secret that, had he been confided, there's no way he wins if he reveals that. So it would have been horrific. But I'm just saying that I do think real life has entered the game, and I would not be surprised in the future to see somebody manipulate that kind of a real life information.
Yeah,
and be able to pull it off in a way that works to their advantage. Varner did not do that here, and this did cross a line I think we all agree this crossed a line that was far beyond anything we've seen before.
I do think that at some point down the road, we're headed to some type of Johnny Fairplay type situation where, you know, hey, I just want you guys to know I didn't tell you anything, but, you know, I need a kidney transplant, or, you know, some sort of big reveal. I think that is not necessarily true, is coming to a final tribal council near you.
Yeah, it was Matt Hoffman all over again from Big Brother, right?
Right, right. But yeah, that the idea, I don't know if anybody is going to think that it's not true when it comes up at a final tribal council. Like, there were some suspicions back in Big Brother 12 about that from podiatrist, Andrew? Captain Kosher?
Yes.
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 So,
I think we can all agree that regardless of how this came out and everything, Zeke handled it fine. We'll talk about Zeke later. Zeke handled it amazingly. And, you know, as far as Zeke goes, as an individual, you know, my opinion of him doesn't change anything about him. Doesn't change my opinion. If anything, going forward just because of how he reacted to this really impossible situation. He's only risen in my regard of him as an individual because of this, which unfortunately may end up hurting him down the line if that. You know, there's no way Zeke can lose now given what he's been through. So, but we can discuss that later.
Well said, AJ. Let's get into talking about these archetypes. So, of course, you like to kick things off, of course, always with one archetype that you feel like is the most or the least likely to win the game.
Yeah, we start with the lowest seed. And yes, Fresh Meat could win the game. Fresh Meat has won the game in the past. Just ask Aubrey about that. But basically, Fresh Meat is the person who has the least experience. You know, we are talking about a returning season here. They're all returnees. It's a little harder to find Fresh Meat because everybody has played before. It's a different scenario. And a lot of these roles are different because people have played before. However, of the people who are left, I think the one who has played the least, the one who has the least experience in dealing with all the situations to come, is Michaela. And I think because of that, Michaela qualifies as Fresh Meat. I mean, certainly she's light years ahead of typical Fresh Meat in the situation, but, you know, someone's got to be the least experienced and the least familiar with what's going on, and it just so happens that she's the one who's left who fits that role.
Trying to think if she has the fewest amount of days. I think that Brad Culpepper lasted long, but I don't know if that Monica Culpepper, like through marriage, does Brad Culpepper earn Monica Culpepper's days?
Well, but on top of that also, Brad's had the opportunity to watch a season that he's been on, and Michaela didn't have that opportunity. You know, both she and Zeke turning around and coming right back, it's a lot more difficult to realize your mistake. So because she went out so early and she came right back, I think it's certainly she has the least experience of being a even returning survivor in that regard.
Now, AJ, is that Fresh Meat goat?
No. I said eat the goat.
Yeah, no, Sandra said, don't eat the goat is what she said in her exit interview.
Queen stays queen, goat stays eaten.
Goat does stay eaten. All right, so Michaela is Fresh Meat. That's number 13. Longest shot to win. I think I agree with the system there. I don't know if I have a better Fresh Meat, but I don't see us walking away from this season in 5 weeks and change with Michaela as the winner of Survivor Game Changers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, she could be taken to the end as a let's just continue the goat metaphor. She could be certainly be taken to the end, and Fresh Meat often gets taken very deep into games. You know, the Edna Maas of the world can last a really long time, but that doesn't mean that it comes time for that final tribal that they really have a case to make for themselves.
AJ, number 12, the 12th least likely player to win the game is always the ninja. Last season, you had Brett as the ninja, and that, you know, turns out he's not a quiet wallflower.
No, and you know, it's nice because this is always a snapshot of the game as we're entering, usually as we're entering the merge. We've seen a lot of tribes that get left in the dust because they're not necessarily making it to tribal council, and there's more interesting dynamics going on. So essentially, the ninja can, once you hit the merge, become a pivotal player, and certainly Brett was someone whose story kind of developed late in the game. But, you know, talking right now in terms of, you know, the edit, you know, this is Survivor. The edit is kind of over the whole season edit. It's not like Big Brother where they're making it on the fly and a ninja can surge and win the game. It's not as likely to happen on Survivor, just because the ninja edit is, to me, is the one who's probably not the most interesting personality, doesn't have the greatest confessionals, and you really do forget about them, especially this season. If you're someone who was on Tavua for a stretch, you know, there was no tribal council for you, so you can easily fall into the background and be forgotten about simply because there's nothing going on that involves your tribe.
AJ, the ninja of this season, who do you got?
In the wake of what just happened, I'm sure people are going to be like, oh, come on, we all know that Sarah Lacina is on the show because of what she said. But up until that speech, I don't really think she's factored much into this season's overall storyline. I certainly, you know, I usually call the ninja the person that if you're going to list all the people who are on the season and who are left in the game, they're the last person you come up with. And quite frankly, if that tribal hadn't happened, I probably would have come up with Sarah last. She has not really had a real interesting story for me. Certainly, once Tony left, her story kind of disappeared too, because that whole connection was that she's going to, you know, be the Tony. She's going to be the criminal this season. And really, what has she done in that regard? I don't think much.
But I do think that we've gotten her opinion on things a few times. I mean, you could argue that there's been times where she's even more visible than Ceri in this season. So, again, it's tough in the Game Changer season to find a ninja. But I do feel like that she has been at least, you know, in the last episode, not just the Tribal Council, that she was, you know, at least considering, you know, should we do this vote against Ozzy? I feel like that she is itchy to make a move. The Tony story is dead, but I feel like she has something going on.
Yeah. Oh, no, she certainly has something going on. Like I said, these are all returning players. They all have the ability to step up and play these other roles. I just think the story that we've been told so far, there are about three or four people who have certainly have been left wanting in terms of their story just by circumstance. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, this has been so much a season where we've been focusing on Sandra and all of her, you know, stuff. That kind of, there was the whole month of mm-hmm. episodes where it was like, I can't believe she did it, she did it, she did it. It was hard for anyone to step up. So, you know, it's just where the pieces fall into place. You could argue that she fits into other categories, Sarah, but for me, Ninja, like I said, without that last tribal, I don't think she would have gotten the edit that she got this last episode, and I think she would have stayed in the background.
All right, AJ, number 11 in your power rankings from most likely to least likely to win is the cheerleader. Do we have a cheerleader this season?
We really don't have the traditional cheerleader. The traditional cheerleader is kind of your mother of the tribe, you're kind of like, oh, Dawn Me, and you know, like the let's all get along kind of thing. Lisa Welchel was a perfect example of someone who's like, tribe. And you know, with all the tribe swaps, it's hard to get that. With all the pre-existing relationships, it's hard to have that. So it doesn't really work in terms of the traditional cheerleader. However, I would say that in terms of always having an optimistic point of view, always in the challenges being very encouraging in that sense of the cheerleader, and certainly as quickly as she came to the defense of Zeke last week, I think Andrea kind of fits this role, and I can certainly see her taking the momentum going forward. She's kind of in the same boat with Sarah, is that Tavua, you know, those Nuku Tavuas didn't see a lot of TV because of the lack of tribals. So they, you know, could they both be ninja? Sure. I just think that she's more of that kind of optimistic force going forward, which kind of leads me to place her in the cheerleader role.
I like that you gave her the Andrea Zuckerman pronunciation.
You know me and my 90210 roots. It's certain name pronunciations get stuck in your head.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good that Andrea is really has not spoken a ill word about anybody really in this season. And so I can't argue with her being the cheerleader here in this group.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, we're going to see a lot more interaction now that the merge is underway. A lot of times we get to this point and we've had, you know, two tribes only throughout, or, you know, we've already had them merge and they merged really early. And so it's oftentimes it's easier to find someone who is standing out because that's their only identity, is that they're vocal and rooting. And I think all these players have enough depth and ability to move from role to role that this season is a lot more difficult at the lower end of trying to figure it out, especially when you haven't seen enough of their interactions.
AJ, number 10 you have is the loose cannon. This is a season with a lot of loose cannons, no?
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of people who have been eliminated could have qualified as loose cannons.
I mean, they could have called the season Survivor Loose Cannons, and, you know, that would have been made as much sense as Game Changers.
Absolutely. In fact, I think, we probably got six or seven people who could have been loose cannon just going in. Like, which one's going to be loose cannon? I could have predicted six or seven of them and not the one that I'm going with. But I think right now, the one person who we have no idea where their brain is at from moment to moment can emotionally change on a dime, can go from screaming, I'm going to kill you, to a 20-minute hug with a former player who's visiting on a boat. Yeah. I mean, is there anyone who's whose motives and next course of action is less locked in than Debbie.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
I think you nailed it, AJ.
It's just it's insane. It's absolutely insane. With the 5 million jobs and and yeah, would you want Debbie coming back on your tribe? I guess it's cannon fodder to just get her right back out. But I mean,
loose cannon fodder.
Yeah, I mean, it's she. I just don't know where her head is at from moment to moment, and I she frightens me.
She she was recentered. She seemed like she had a low point with the whole Brad Culpepper fiasco, but then Cochran sort of calmed her down. How much credit do we have to give Cochran for this if she ends up sort of going into the merge and in like a pretty good place mentally?
I don't necessarily think you give Cochran the credit. I think if someone else had been there, just having someone from the outside world there, regardless of who it was, I think probably would have snapped her out of the game mode long enough for her to like reset. The fact that it was Cochran and she respects him and he gave her some advice certainly was a positive, but she could just as easily have just said, no, I don't believe you for a second kind of thing. So I'm not entirely sure that would have been the tipping point, you know?
AJ, on the Cochran thing, did you like that Survivor did that?
You know, I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem. In terms of all the stuff that's going on this season, in terms of all the twists and the extra advantages and all that stuff, I think for a returning player season, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with mixing things up and changing the format and whatnot. If it was a season where we're starting with all new players, I think it's time to go back to the tried and true and maybe you throw a different take on the immunity idol or something like that. Maybe you try one new twist or something like that. But overall, I have no problem with doing new things. And this was a fun, harmless new thing, I think. And it could have been even more volatile and interesting if the relationship had been different in terms of who got out there to exile. But I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. I do think it might be more interesting in a new player season to have somebody come in and sort of have to, you know, Cochran and would be like sizing up a new person. That might be fun as well. All right. So number 9 is the narcissist. Again, AJ, you know, you got a lot to choose from here.
Certainly. There's a lot of people on here on this season who have a very high opinion of themselves and not always worthy of that. But in terms of the player who really personifies this kind of I'm physically fit and I can win any challenge whenever I want and I have a social game that I can turn on and just their own opinion of themselves is far greater probably than deserved. I think it has in the past been Ozzy. It in the future will be Ozzy. I just think it's Ozzy. We might as well just call this the Ozzy.
Yeah. Okay. Now, it's interesting. Is that based on anything he's doing in this season, or is this all on past reputation?
Some of it is just based on the reputation that he has in the past and how other people are reacting to him. I mean, even just this past episode where it was like, you know, we have to get Ozzy out now because otherwise he'll win out. I mean, he's kind of proven over time through his strategy of, oh, well, I'll just go to redemption and win my way back and do that to me. It, like, he's proven that he can do it. I mean, I'm not saying it's not deserved that he can have this kind of confidence that he can win whenever he needs to. But I think it comes across in a negative way at times to other people. And certainly it impacts his social game. I don't think he's as strong a social player as he believes himself to be because people are always thinking that, you know, hey, this guy's full of himself.
Are you impressed with Ozzy 4.0?
I'm impressed from the standpoint of you know, we're talking about a guy in his mid-30s who is coming back again and again and again, and I don't think he's lost much in terms of the athleticism. I mean, compare that to, like, you know, Colby when he returned for 3.0. Like,
yeah.
That was such a huge disappointment in terms of, you know, age affects people differently, but I think Ozzy has made it a point to, he's such a narcissist, he won't allow himself to not be able to live up to that reputation. And more power to him for that, you know, from a personal standpoint. But in terms of the game itself, I mean, it might have been better for him not to show off as much and maybe play that I'm not as strong as I used to be in terms of his greater longevity long term in a season like this. But who knows? You know, if he wins out, he wins out.
He's still hanging in there. I mean, the last time he played, Cochran called him the middle-aged Aussie. And now look at him. He's still dominating in these challenges. But how much of a target doesn't make him, I think, is going to be the question heading into this merge. Number eight is the old reliable, AJ. Who's your old reliable this season?
Well, there's really there's only one old guy left.
Does it have to be an old guy? Because no, off the top of my head, I was thinking Sierra Dawn Thomas is old reliable.
You know, that would be a possibility if I thought that,
like, she's never flipping, she's never going anywhere, she's gonna like align herself with these, like, with the Dan Foleys of the world, then you just like she's good.
The difference is that old reliable for me never is much of a strategist. Old reliable is kind of like always an open book. What you see is what you get. Typically we see them as being these kind of cowboy types, not cowboy, but you know, the Ranger Rick types, you know, they're going to have the hat on their heads.
What about a barrel racer?
A barrel racer? Well, I think we have a different place for her this season. But in terms of just, this person isn't necessarily a master strategist. If they say they're loyal to you, they're going to be loyal to you. If they, you know, they're going to do their best to compete in the challenges, There's not a lot of subterfuge here, generally speaking. It tends to be the older male type, simply because that's kind of where they fit in. They're not able to do any of these other roles, but the one thing they know they can do is be true to themselves. They know who they are. They're not trying to be any different. And, you know, they may not win challenges, but they're always going to put together a good show.
Who you got? Are you going to go Troyzan or are you going to go Brad?
I'm going Troyzan. I think Troyzan is pretty much, you know, we knew what Troyzan was going to bring to the table. I think he's brought that to the table. You know, the having the immunity idol for him only magnifies this kind of personality of his, and he feels safe, and he's safe to be who he is and not change, because he's not fearful of that coming back to bite him. And I think that, you know, in the challenges, he's never overmatched. He does well. He gets through, and I think he is old reliable. I think you're not seeing Troyzan and suddenly being surprised at what he's going to give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not flipping against his main allies. You know, he got so upset when he got flipped on, and I do think that people's reactions to things often will tell you how they would do if they were in the other person's situations. And the fact that, you know, Kim flipped on him in that spot, you know, really left him so incensed. That's something that old reliable just couldn't wrap his head around.
Yeah, old reliable is a number, and it's a number you can count on, and that's Troyzan if he's loyal to the people that he's loyal to.
So old reliable is there at number eight. Number seven, it's the beta part of the marriage of convenience.
Yes, indeed. And of course, as always, we will skip that, because once you find out who the marriage of convenience beta is, you're usually able to figure out the alpha, and we want to save that for later on. Okay.
I think I know where you're going with that, but I don't want to spoil it. All right, the idiot savant here.
yes, our idiot savant, the person whose strategic musings and decisions you're left constantly scratching your head. You have no idea why they're doing what they're doing, and yet every single decision they make seems to work out in the end, despite the fact it probably shouldn't. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle. It's an enigma. It's a mystery. It's someone who can find not one immunity idol, but find another immunity idol, and then not use the immunity idol when you should use the immunity idol, and uses it when he shouldn't. Like, I don't understand what is going on in Ty's head. I've never understood what's going on in Ty's head, and I don't think I'll ever know what's going on in his head.
No, I think that's a strong choice that what he's doing, you would not draw it up that way, yet here he is. He makes the merge again. You know, he had that whole incident at the Tribal Council 2 weeks ago, but he is a likable guy. So there you go. Ty is the idiot savant. I'm trying to look up on Ko Rong if you had him there in that same slot, if he's somebody who's stuck with it. And no, the idiot savant you had as Scott Pollard, and recently living up to his name even.
Yeah, pretty much there. You know, I think the thing with Ty this season, though, is that because of the history of that season, I think Ty's got a very good shot to make it to the final tribal if we're going three. Because let's face it, you saw his performance the last time, and there's zero way that he can win this game.
Yeah,
zero. He has no ability to defend his actions and explain what he was thinking. And so no one's going to give him $1 million unless he's there with like
it's have to be him and Debbie in a final two. That's yeah, the only way.
Exactly. He needs or if he had taken like Scott Pollard and where everyone hated him so much, it's like so. All right, I guess we got to give.
But
him
not
the tie.
On
I
that mean, jury. Like maybe right. the audience yeah. was voting, but there was a lot of people in the jury that liked Scott Pollard.
Yeah, he's a tough person to win when you can't defend yourself. And like I said, that's why Idiots Abound is where they are. I mean, they're often going to be taken to the end because you just know, well, if I take him, everyone's going to look at his decisions. And, you know, if he's the type of person who could say, hey, you don't understand my decisions, but I'm here and look at what I did and here's my reasoning. And if you don't agree with it, well, that person can win. But if they're that type of a person, I don't think we would view them as the Idiots Abound.
Okay. AJ, Captain Loophole. Where's your Captain Loophole this season?
And Captain Loophole is the person who understands the game. They're usually a super fan. They're usually someone who really, really can see beyond the checkers version of, well, if I do this, you'll do this. They're able to see the chess of the game and say, all right, I see why you did that, and I respect that, and I'm going to try and make you understand that kind of thing. This person can often be placed in a position where they're kind of handcuffed and unable to get these people who aren't as smart in terms of the gameplay to see their point of view. And so that's why Captain Loophole isn't higher on the list than even this, because they know the game in and out. And this is, once again, this is Aubrey.
Okay.
Aubrey understands the game. I don't think anyone would doubt that she understands the game. I think if she has a weakness, and this came to pass in her season the first time around, is that she lacks a little bit of the ability to dumb it down enough to get people to understand what she's doing.
Captain Loophole, has she tried to play any angles this season?
I think the numbers just have not been in her favor. I think anytime she's in a situation this season, she's been around such big personalities as well. I think that's kind of this, like, if she wanted to work with Tony shot himself in the foot, you know, like there was nothing she could do about that. If she wanted to work with Sandra, if she had wanted to work with Sandra was such a target. She knew that was a losing strategy. There's so much that was just beyond her control based on tribal placement. I think that, you know, when she finally found someone that she could possibly work with in Malcolm, like even that just like blew up in her face, and it wasn't her fault by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think she's done anything wrong. I just think that this is just one of these games where the luck has just been against her the entire time, but she's still here. And I think if there's anyone who's going to be able to figure out where to go from here now that the merge has come and moving forward, seeing where the right places are to move, I think she's got the best chance of really going from the bottom to the top.
AJ, your X factor, number four in the power rankings.
The X factor is the person who is different from everybody else. That's always what I say. So if it was a season where, for some reason, 12 women made the merge and one man, it would be the man. Like, you know, there's something about this person that is blatantly obvious that this person is not like anybody else. We're talking about a season now with all returning players, so it can't be, oh, I'm a returning player. Sandra would have definitely been able to fit in this category perfectly because she's the only two-time winner. That would be something that would make her obviously different from everybody else, and everyone's going to treat them differently. In this season, a lot of people have gone through that role and have been eliminated. And right now, the only person I can see that really fits this is Ceri. She hasn't been to Tribal.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a torch yet. She's had no opportunity to be voted out. She hasn't done anything to really, since episode one, where I thought she was in dangerous jeopardy of had she gone to Tribal, she'd have been gone. I think she hasn't had the opportunity to leave. She's been able to recover. And right now, she's a perfect person to just take all the way because she hasn't done anything. I think she's in a really good position, if she doesn't screw it up, to just stay in the background, play up the fact that, you know, she's, hey, I've never won anything, and you know, hey, just stick with me. I'll be a number, and I haven't been to tribals. I haven't pissed anybody off. So I think it's an interesting X factor. It's one that really came about as a result of gameplay as opposed to casting. And I think that's a really nice sweet spot for Ciri, someone of her ability to manipulate people to operate out of.
Yeah, I love that pick, AJ. And for Ciri, you could not have come up with a better game plan to sort of get people to forget about her. Where, okay, how about, you know, you just don't go to Tribal Council for the first 20 days of the game. I mean, it's really the opposite of what Sandra had to go through. And, I mean, can you imagine if this was Sandra that we'd be talking about going into the merge like this? I mean, we wouldn't be able to contain ourselves. So, I mean, what a great spot for Ciri.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It could have been that Ciri was the ninja because we haven't seen her in terms of, you know, if her tribe's not being focused on in any week.
If this was a first-time season, I think she probably definitely would be.
Absolutely. But because this is Ciri 4.0 and we know what Ciri is capable of, I think you could not have plotted a better course for her to just make it to the merge without having to have done anything.
All right, AJ, the mad scientist, where are you going with this?
Well, the mad scientist is the person who, no matter what the situation is, cannot help but try and scheme and plot, even if it's to their detriment. They're just not content to sit around and just let the game go around them. And I am very surprised by who I'm picking here in terms of who I would have thought would fit this role when we had started the season. But I got to tell you, I think Haley has done an amazing job of never letting the status quo sit if she didn't like where it was headed. And in terms of getting up at that tribal council and walking over there and starting a conversation and getting the huddles going and just... Whenever anything happens where she's not happy, she has not been afraid to stir the pot. And some of it's been out of necessity, but some of it has just been out of, hey, I'm here to play, let's play. And I've been very impressed with her thus far because I was not impressed with her at all in Worlds Apart. She was very forgettable in that season. She's one of these picks that I was just like, game changer, really? But I think she's one of those picks, you know, kind of like your Amber's. Like, why is she back?
She's not my Amber.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying. you know, why is she back? Well, hey, you know, yeah. She proved it. Haley's proven that she's a good pick to come back.
Yeah, she has had some good moments this season. I really liked her in the Beast Mode Cowboy Tribal Council, and she did have some good moments in the Combined Tribal Council. I feel like I might have switched her with Sarah Lucina. I feel like Sarah Lucina seems like that she might be more itchy to try something where she's talking to Troy Zan, where she's talking about sticking with the group that she's in. The safe move, she says.
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
And then she's talking about maybe going with Jeff Varner and against Ozzy. There is no great mad scientist here on the board.
There isn't. And the only reason I would go with Haley as a mad scientist over Sarah is because that clip sums it up. It's like, you know, it's all maybes with Sarah. It's like, maybe that isn't the, you know, maybe we should do this. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should do this. Haley's doing it, like, for better or for worse. I mean, she could have just sat there and let that tribal happen around her. But she
have a little bit more of a history with being the mad scientist. She is the person that tried to get the Braun tribe to throw a challenge to try to get Cliff Robinson voted off. And of course, everything with the merge from last time around. So she does have a little bit more of a history for being involved with some kooky stuff.
Sure, sure. I just haven't seen her actually do any of it. She's talked a lot about it.
Well, she didn't like count to see her Cliff Robinson having to shoot basketballs at the end of the challenge she was trying to throw. And Jatia,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Being so terrible.
Wow, talk about a five-hole challenge.
No, it's the opposite of a five-hole challenge.
Well, it should have been, right?
It could have been. All right, AJ, so you ready to talk the Marriage of Convenience?
I am. I am very ready to talk the Marriage of Convenience. And Marriage of Convenience, in some cases, it can be a showmance that develops, a relationship that you're seeing here, where... two people are inseparable. Could be a bromance. It could be something like that. It could just be two people, you know, your Malcolm and Denise kind of thing, where they're the only last two left of their tribe and they're working together and you know they're locked in solid. There's many different ways to create this marriage convenience, but it's kind of like two people who are working together. And they're a very strong alliance. You don't really see them breaking up, maybe because they've had power the whole game, or maybe just because they haven't had power. And by staying together, it's the only way they've survived this long. Really, the Brad and Sierra relationship for me has been really interesting to watch this season. And I was surprised by those two being as seemingly bonded as they are, but they are. And just in terms of, you know, the whole JT thing where, you know, oh, Brad, you're safe. Well, then I'm, you know, making sure that Sierra sticks around and we're going to give her the idol. Like just things like that. You can see that these two have formed a bond, a teammate relationship there that isn't going to go away.
Sure. Now, AJ, here is the wrinkle. Sometimes you throw me for a curveball here on who is the alpha and who is the beta here in the marriage of convenience. Who is who?
Well, in this case, it's tough because this is almost like a situation where you had Sophie and Albert, and it really wasn't clear until towards the end of the game when Sophie clearly stepped up and was like, "Yeah, you drop it because I'm in charge here. I'm the alpha. Do it, Albert." Like there was a clear delineation there that had been hidden up until now. I think either one could have been the alpha, but because Brad is doing such a good job of reaching out and drawing in other people in terms of, you know, now, oh, Aubrey, why don't you come along? And like, he's really doing a nice job of creating a, you know, a four into five, into five is better than four kind of relationship that he didn't do his first time around. I'm giving Brad the alpha. And I think Sierra is, even though Sierra is probably the better player, and if you ask me who I think had a better chance to win, I think it's Sierra. I do think she defers to Brad because it's necessary for this relationship to work. And so I think she's giving him the alpha role and will be burned by that at some point, that she's created the illusion that he's the alpha. Mm-hmm. If perhaps it might be her. If you know what I'm saying.
I mean, based on the edit, there's no illusion. I mean, you could debate whether it's better to be the alpha or the beta in this type of relationship in the game of Survivor. But based on what we're seeing, I mean, it would be very difficult to argue that Sierra Dawn Thomas is the alpha in this relationship. And Brad is riding in the sidecar of Sierra Dawn Thomas Express.
Yeah, although he's talked a very good game this go-round about, you know, his, like, well, Monica's my alpha. I mean, you know, he hasn't said that in those words, but, you know, he's been very glowing of Monica this time around in a way that he didn't necessarily exhibit when they were on together. And, you know, he was this kind of raging mad dog, like, don't you, my family, you know, Blood versus Water was a little bit more harsh.
Blood, Water,
Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've seen a different Brad this time around, and I'm happy to see it because I didn't think he had it in him. I when we were voting for the second chances, I was like, why do we want to see Brad again? This is another instance where I was just like, I really don't want to see him again, but I'm glad he made it on the show again, and it's not just because his kid's playing at Syracuse.
Okay. AJ, now we have one spot left here, and I believe that we are on the precipice of history because I think something is about to happen that has never happened before. I think that you are about to give somebody the same archetype for the second season in a row.
Well, I mean, look, the diplomat is the person who can best get along with anybody under any situation and can build relationships with anybody, can vote people out and still have that side like him or her at the end of the day. We've had a lot of diplomats over the years who have not won because they're so afraid to make a move as the diplomat because they want everyone to like them. And we've seen that happen where it's come back to bite them. But Zeke is so good at getting every single person on the island on his side, even when they disagree and are not on the same side. And I think we've seen that time and again from the moment he was on last season and Millennials to today. I've never been more impressed with someone's ability to just have everybody like them, even when you're voting their best ally out. And that's a gift. I think Zeke might be the strongest diplomat we've ever had. And as someone who enjoys the strategy and everything, he knows the game as well. He might very well be the strongest survivor player ever, even if he doesn't win. And I think he's got such a target on him because everyone recognizes how good he is. I think it's almost like he's too good for the room, especially in a returning player season.
I mean, the strongest survivor player ever that I'm not shooting it down, but could you drill down a little further by what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, this is a game where if you're too much of a physical threat, you get voted out early in the merge process. I mean, you can make it to the merge because you got to keep your individual tribe strong, but the physical threats once you get to the merge are no longer needed. And it's like, we can't have that person win out. So physical threats get kicked to the curb. And I don't think Zeke is the strongest physical threat. As good as he is in puzzles and everything, though, he can still win immunities going forward. You don't want to ever be perceived as the leader of an alliance, because that person usually gets the boot once we get to the merge. Like, you know, he's their leader. We got to get them out. And he puts himself in a position where he's not perceived as the leader because he surrounds himself with so many people that he's able to pass off that leadership. What got him into trouble last time was that it became Zeke versus David. And once it became that, he set himself up to be considered the leader. And I think that's why he went, because it became this Zeke versus David thing. I think he's learned from that so quickly that he is now not perceived as a threat in terms of physical challenges. He's not perceived as a threat as being the leader of any group, because he is able to ingratiate himself into every group, and he's able to almost like hide in plain sight. And you put those two together and you have someone who is not going to be voted out. It's amazing how he has positioned himself in that situation. His advantage was that no one had seen his season going into this. And I think people didn't know what to expect. And, you know, Jeff Varner did speak about in his post-game interviews how he just assumed he may have been the Russell of his season, because why else would they have brought him back? And he's completely the opposite. Russell, it's all about me. Zeke, it's all about you. What do you want to do? And I've seen a lot of players who are able to do one or the other, to be that diplomat who is able to manipulate people without them knowing it. And I've also seen the challenge beast who's able to be likable enough that no one really wants to vote them out yet. Mm-hmm. And they're able to get to that point where they can win out. Mike Holloway, for one, even though he was at the bottom, people still liked him generally. I mean, there was that one, obviously the one incident at the auction that kind of turned things on his head, but he was on that path. Zeke, I think, made that fatal mistake last time, and I don't think he's going to make it this time.
Well, you know, he's a good diplomat, at least, because that he was a diplomat last season. You watch the rest of the season and you say, let me give him diplomat again. So that's a good sign for somebody who's the diplomat.
Yeah. And like I said, I think if anything, because this is returning players, there's a chance that they get to that point where there's five or six of them left and they go, you know, if Zeke gets to the end, he wins the same because everybody likes him. And that's just the nature, I think, playing with players who are going to figure that out more so than most. I don't think he's going to be able to, like, if he's there with Sari, you think Sari's not going to know that? Mm-hmm. Of course she is. You know, he's not going to have to be tricked into giving up immunity like Eric did. But I think it's one of those situations where I think people will recognize what he brings to the table, but he's the type of player that in a season, if he hadn't made that mistake in his season, he probably would have won.
AJ, now that we have our board, Fresh Meat is Michaela, the Ninja is Sarah Lucina, the Cheerleader is Andrea, the Loose Cannon is Debbie, the Narcissist is Ozzy, Old Reliable is Troy Zand, the Beta Marriage of Convenience is Sierra Dawn Thomas, the Idiot Savant is Ty, Captain Loophole is Aubrey, the X Factor is Sari, the Mad Scientist is Haley, the Alpha of the Marriage of Convenience is Brad, and the Diplomat is Zeke. Are you ready to get into our draft?
Yeah, let's draft this sucker.
Okay, now, AJ, I told you earlier in the podcast I was going to track down the results of last season's draft. And I can understand why you would want to forget it. Our intrepid at Randy Noop had been tracking and really did a great spreadsheet throughout the whole season. And by a final score of 101-41, I was the winner of the last draft that we did.
Kudos to you.
Although, really, I was propelled by Adam and his 10-0 Final Tribal Council performance. I mean, that's really the thing that the Final Tribal Council votes weighs very heavily in our scoring system, which is which awards 3 points for every vote received at Final Tribal Council. So 3 points for making the Final Tribal Council plus 3 points for each vote received at the Final Tribal Council. So Adam Klein in that finale earned me 33 points. So that was, a huge swing.
I think it's only appropriate, though, that, me, the Gen Xer, did not end up defeating the millennial in that season, given how it turned out. So I'm okay with that.
Okay. Well, I thank you for rebranding me a millennial. That helps keep me popular with the kids.
From my point of view?
Yes. Thank you. All right. So, AJ, you will have the first pick in this snake draft. Boy, Adam Klein was really like the LaDainian Tomlinson of Survivor Fantasy Draft. 49 points in our scoring system last season. The second leading player in the scoring system was Ken, who I also had with 21 points. Apparently I was apparently, a very good pick.
Very good pick. I don't know why you're not voting for me to win, though.
I also had really the third leading scorer, David Wright, with 15.
Can I just say about that tribal council, I was stunned. Not that Adam won, but that he won that single-handedly, because I actually think Hannah did an amazing job at the final tribal, and I actually think she won the final tribal.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think there was any chance that she was going to win the game and swing enough people. But I thought she did an amazing job at the final tribal and probably deserved a couple of votes.
Well, we had an interesting conversation about that the other day when I had her here in the studio. So if you want to know more about that, definitely check out my interview with Hannah from last week. All right. AJ, number one pick off the board. The question is, do you go with the person that you just said, perhaps one of the best survivors ever?
Well, I think I have to. It's not necessarily something I would do, because like I said, I don't think he's going to win because I think they'll figure it out. But because I do have that high of an opinion of him as a player, how could I not?
Okay. All right. So we have Zeke as the number one pick overall. To AJ. Okay.
Because he's not getting back to me.
Yeah. Well, I have two picks now back to back, and I don't think I've really ever done this before in the history of our fantasy draft, but I just might need to swallow that whole marriage of convenience right here, that if we're going for, points for getting to the final tribal council, feel good about where this is. Well, I should rephrase that. I don't know if I feel good, but I feel like that we are looking at we are on that track. I feel like that this merge is heading towards Brad's people versus Ozzy's people, and I feel like Ozzy's people are outgunned. So give me Brad and Sierra Dawn Thomas at the two and the three.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so in your power rankings, AJ, that the number one and two pick are off the board, and the number six in your power rankings are off the board.
Well, I have any confidence that he's going to play his idols right? No, but he has two of them, and we do get points for playing idols.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a perfect goat to take to the end. I gotta go a tie in my next two picks here. Simply based on that.
Yet, the most valuable thing in our scoring system is, tied with each, with making the Final Tribal Council 3 points, but votes received at Final Tribal Council. So I don't know if this is an upside pick, but definitely it's there's a high floor on tie.
Yeah, it's just, I think I gotta go with that. And look, Ozzy has a chance of winning anytime he's in a challenge. He could be voted out next time, but just on the basis that he could have three immunity wins in him between now and the time he goes, I think it's worth going with Ozzie here.
Look, you got a lot of eggs on the Ozzie side of the aisle right now. So I will not hedge, and I'll stick with the Brad Culpepper side of things. Give me at number six. Let me take Aubrey, just because I feel like that she is in a spot where who's coming for her? She's aligned with Brad. Could she potentially be somebody who makes something happen? I think that I'll go with Aubrey at six, and then I will stick with a very similar strategy, and I will hedge in my not hedging. And if it's not Aubrey, then give me Suri. That's going to be the person they're not worried about in that alliance who comes out and makes it to the finals.
Very good pick. I think either one of those would have been snatched up by me had you not taken them.
I know you love Aubrey. I think you might have taken her number one back in a draft.
I believe I did. Let's see here. All right. I am going to.
And again,
go...
we will each draft six people. One person will be sent to the SS Exile Island with Cochrane, and it might be the same person.
Very well might be. All right, so I am going to go. Do I go all in with this team? No, I do not. Why don't I go with Haley?
Haley, your mad scientist.
My mad scientist. And I'm going to go with Michaela because I do think there's a chance that she can potentially win an immunity along the way here. And I just think that we're at the point now where she's made the merge. Like, she becomes someone you want to take to the end and hope that she doesn't get votes. So I think she might last a while here if she keeps her mouth shut.
Okay. All right, AJ. So for me here, you know, I have Brad's whole alliance except for one person. So give me Troyzan at pick 10. He has an idol, so you know, you figure at least points if he plays that at some point. You have to play it correctly, right? Or you just play the idol. What do we get points for?
It's just if you are the one who says, "Jeff, I am playing this," you get the points. If you say, "I am playing this on somebody," you still get the points. It's whoever presents the idol and says, "I am playing this."
So I really think we should look in the future to modifying that rule to playing the hidden immunity correctly and not like wasting it when you played it on somebody who is not going home. But that we can have that in the off season, that conversation. So I'm really left with three players left: Sarah, Andrea or Andrea, and Debbie. And I feel like it's definitely not Debbie. I'm torn between Sarah and Andrea. And if I'm going to pick somebody from that side, give me the person with the track record. Give me Andrea.
Okay.
So you have a pick between Sarah and Debbie.
Oh, man. This is a real Clark's choice here.
As in both options are cursed?
Man, you know what? For the sheer fun of it. For the sheer insanity of it, I'm sorry, Ms. Criminal. I'm going to go with Wanner here.
Okay, talk me through the pick, AJ.
She's just insane enough, just crazy enough that she's kind of in that category of people that people won't mind taking her if they can cope with her being in camp.
So you think that she has Philip Shepherd upside where they like, let me take her all the way to the final three. She won't get any votes and, you know, she'll be my Philip.
Yeah.
Sherry tried to do with Shamar back in Survivor Karamoan.
Right. Before he got the sand in his eye. Exactly. Right. Wow, Shamar people getting injured in strange ways, right? It's a cursed name.
It's a tall order, though, because I don't know who's... I could see Zeke doing it, but I can't see Brad doing it, certainly. I don't know if Ozzy thinks in those terms. So,
well, and she also has her little advantage.
That's true.
If she reveals that she has this advantage to someone at the right time, maybe she plays it right. I mean, I don't know that we've ever seen it played right, but you know, it's possible that she can pull a rabbit out of her hat at that point. So she does have some tools that she's working with there. So yeah, it's the last pick, and I think we've already kind of drawn those battle lines down alliance lines. So
yeah,
you know, why not go with the crazy here and hope for some fun?
Okay, so AJ is really hoping for this Wednesday night that Ozzy and Zeke and Andrea pick up Michaela and Haley, and then they use Debbie's extra vote, and they knock out Brad and the people from Team Rob and cruise to a pogonging of all the Brad people and deliver the win for AJ. And, of course, that ironically, my winner pick is on your team. So I'm sort of like at a crossroads between what I hope for. I would have gone with Sarah Lucina over Debbie, though.
It was close. It was close. And I was kind of hoping on Andrea Zuckerman. I was kind of hoping Andrea would have come to me because I've met her in real life, and I think she's a great person.
She's the best.
Yeah, you know, and just looking at this, I mean, I know this is, you know, if Zeke wins, then I've got a shot here. If Ozzy, you know, goes deep in challenges, wins, I've got a shot here. But I mean, I'm just looking at this going, wouldn't a tie Debbie final two be the craziest thing we've ever seen on this show?
Yeah. I don't know if people would be like in that voting booth like Hannah for 15 minutes before, like, really? Do I have something?
The only thing that could have topped that is if it's Ty and Debbie in the final two. Like, we've brought back another survivor to talk to you and give you advice. Lil, come on out.
Okay. Wasn't sure where we were going with that. So yeah, Lil would be fine. All right, AJ. So let's just review your team. It's Zeke, Ty, Ozzy, Haley, Michaela, and Debbie taking on my draft team of Brad, Sierra Dawn Thomas, Aubrey Suri, Troy Zan, and Andrea. And hopefully Randy is up to the task to keeping score once again. And then we'll forget about what happened. And then come next fall, either when we look at Big Brother over the summer or next fall, we'll figure out what happened here today.
Okay. A good time was had by all, though. That I will always remember.
Always. Okay. AJ, of course, people can follow you on Twitter at AJ Mass. It is baseball season, and you have a lot of stuff going on over at ESPN. You also continue to podcast. You want to give us any of the highlights?
Yeah, you can always find The Hamster Factor. It's a fun little movie podcast I do with a good RHAP friend, Mike Bloom. Where I come up with movies that I have seen that he has not. It's that millennial Gen X divide again.
Have you ever done a movie that he's seen that you haven't seen?
No, we're going to save that for like the twistiest twistos twist episode of all time later on down the line. Mm-hmm. At some point, he's going to turn the tables on me. But for now, we have no shortage of these films, and we're having a great time.
What was the last
with
one?
This? We just did a Spanish language horror film called Rec, mm-hmm. Which and Mike does not like horror films to begin with. Now throw subtitles in. He actually preferred it with the subtitles because he could lower the volume a little bit and just read and not be have the jump scares get him as much. But we always have a good time discussing it, and Hamster Factor is a fun podcast that you can check out. Like you said, I got my ESPN.com baseball articles that you can find, and I'm always there on the at AJ Mass at Twitter for both fantasy advice and Survivor, Big Brother Canada, Amazing Race, you know, your reality show fare.
Okay.
I'm there to discuss.
All right. I'm trying to take a look back at some of the movies that you guys have done. I was going to say 41. Is that the Jackie Robinson movie prequel?
Yeah, that was one of our jokes of that one, I think. That is actually a time travel film.
Okay.
That where the number has pretty much nothing to do with the movie.
All right, AJ. Well, it's always a pleasure to catch up, and all the best, okay?
And you as well, and best of luck with the rest of the season, and keep doing a good job with those exit
interviews.
The Survivor
interviews. Season or the Mets season?
A little bit of both, my friend.
I could use it.
From your mouth to Hansel Robles' ears or something like that.
Yeah. The Mets have a bullpen full of game changers, except that they're all going in the wrong way. Like,
yeah.
I like the games how they were when the starters left after seven innings.
Indeed.
God forbid Jake
Indeed.
DeGrom could throw 100 pitches, Terry.
Terry Collins, Jeremy Collins, which would you prefer?
Jeremy Collins.
Yes, really. I think we're both unanimous there.
All right, AJ, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you again soon. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was AJ Mass with the 13 archetypes. Feel really good about my draft team. I think that AJ's side is going to be a more exciting season, so I don't mind if I lose, but I feel good about where the merge is headed based on all the podcasts that I've been doing in terms of how the merge is looking going into it. All right, so before we get to David Bloomberg and why Jeff Varner lost again, we are not going to be picking apart that tribal council again. We're going to be talking about what went on in his game over the first 6 hours and change of the season. That's coming up next. Before we get to that, let me just take a moment and tell you about a survey that's going on over at Podcast One. Actually, it's at podcastone.study. Podcast One, one word, .study. It's a survey that takes about 10 minutes to fill out. But for the first 250 people that go through and complete the survey, you will get a $25 gift card to restaurant.com and a chance to win an additional $250 Visa gift card. Again, the survey takes about 10 minutes asking you questions about a number of different things. If you're interested in doing that, go to podcastone.study. Helps us get some more information, which is useful for the advertisers, and filling out the survey helps out with that. So feel free as you're going along, podcastone.study. And now let me throw it to my interview with David Bloomberg on why Jeff Varner lost. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisterino back here to talk with David Bloomberg about why the latest Survivor lost the game. And of course, an interesting week to do this. David Bloomberg.
Hi. Yes, an interesting week indeed.
Yes. And David, with that, I know this is a week where everybody is talking about Survivor, but my goal here is to not once again pick over the bones of what went on at Tribal Council between Jeff Varner and Zeke.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, right after the episode ended, I was asked on Twitter, I think you were tagged in some of them too, if we were even going to do the podcast this week. But I replied that we even discuss it when someone gets medevaced out. So, of course, we would do it for this episode, even though it seemed pretty obvious what had happened. And I do want to say, you know, back in Koh Rong, when Alicia was voted out, I began with a disclaimer, and I think it's a good idea to do the same here. You've already had several great podcasts discussing what happened, what was wrong, etc. But this is a different type of discussion. If anyone wants to know my thoughts on what happened at Tribal Council, I've shared some of them on Twitter and in the Patreon Facebook group. I think what we're going to do here is go over what Jeff did right and wrong in the game and what led to his loss. It's not part of this podcast to judge actions that went beyond the game. You mentioned at the end of the voicemail podcast with Antonio that you thought it would be best to discuss what happened up to the point of Tribal Council. And I agree, because I think, as we'll see, the decision was already made before that Tribal Council ever began. So, you know, we'll just go through the rules, same as always, talking about what went wrong.
Jeff Varner found himself in a very dire, desperate situation, and he was not in that spot on day one. So we are going to talk about how did he end up getting into that position. And really, I thought Jeff Varner was a sitting duck coming into this season, David. I talked about it. I thought he had a good chance to be the first boot. I thought that based on what he did back in Survivor Cambodia, I thought that everybody was going to look at him as very schemy. He's up to something. You can't trust him. He had a million and one pregame alliances going into that season. Of course, we all remember the video from Mikey the Chimp of him talking about, I have an alliance with this person, I got an alliance with this person. He seemed to really have all of that on the back burner. We didn't really hear very much about that at all coming into this season. And he sort of stabilized his game from the get-go. So it'll be interesting to see how ultimately it spun so far out of control. But David, we always start with scheming and plotting. Scheming and plotting is something that's never been foreign to Jeff.
Right, right. And as a matter of fact, I am going to quote the first line of what I said about rule number one in why Jeff lost from Second Chance. Which was, there should be no doubt in anyone's mind that Jeff knew the primary rule of Survivor. And that still held. You know, he made some tight alliances early on, and then he held on to some of them through various swaps until he and Sandra got swapped into a position where they were in a definite minority. But even then, he kept trying to make something happen. However, as we discussed last week, unlike Sandra, he was fooled into thinking that they had actually made inroads. Once Sandra was voted out, that idea obviously went out the window. He realized he was clearly at the bottom. He even told Zeke that they didn't need to put on a charade, that he would have gone along with voting Sandra out. And I think he probably would have, even though Sandra had been his tightest ally at the time, because he was keeping Sandra around at that point as his version of a meat shield, which basically someone who was both a bigger threat than him and weaker in challenges.
Yeah, a beat shield, as I referred to it in one of the other podcasts from a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, with Liana.
Yes.
And so, you know, I have no doubt that he would have sacrificed Sandra the same way he sacrificed PG in Second Chance when PG tried to protect him and she drew the target on herself instead. I do think it was an interesting move for Jeff to ask for one-on-one time with everyone to make his pitch. You know, everyone knew what was up, so at least that removes the attempt to do the secret scramble there. And he did use that time to figure out that Zeke was protecting Ozzy and therefore probably working with him. At that point, he realized that probably his only move was to try to throw someone else under the bus. So he revealed the information to Andrea and Sarah to try to stir things up. What he didn't seem to have considered was that one of them might be part of that secret alliance as well. And it does seem that Andrea is part of it. You know, I'm considering whether this was a mistake on his part or not, but I guess in the long run, well, I guess in the short run, it didn't matter because he had to try anything and everything at that point. And if neither of the women were in on the secret alliance, then he might get somewhere. If they were, then he really didn't lose anything because he had nothing to lose in the game by that point. He was trying to scheme and plot his way out of having his torch snuffed, rather than just sitting back and accepting that it would happen. We saw Sarah and maybe Andrea get upset because they had been thrown under the bus by Jeff. But some of the things Zeke has said since then have indicated that he managed to get them back on the same page. So, like I had said before, Jeff's last hope was gone before tribal council. But it does bring up a question to me that doesn't really have anything to do with Jeff. However, I'm still going to bring it up. I don't understand why Sarah, in particular, was so upset that Zeke told Jeff that she and Andrea would lie to him about whether or not he was safe. Jeff was headed out the door anyway, and it's not like he was going to the jury. It didn't matter what Jeff thought at that point. So who cares? I don't get why she was so upset about that. I don't know if you have thought about that at all or not.
You know, just going back to what we know about Sarah Lucina as a player, you know, she's talked about how she's going to play and she's not going to be a cop. She's going to play like a criminal. But one thing that we have seen from her is that she really does have a big reaction to information. You know, when people tell her something, we haven't really seen her say like, no, I'm not doing anything. I think he's bluffing. She seems to have always, whether it was in Kagiyan or this season, she seems like she's always very quick to react to things.
Well, I guess that explains it. She just obviously wasn't thinking, oh, this doesn't matter. She was more thinking, oh, that Zeke, you know, he's lying about us.
Yeah.
And it just didn't matter.
She's doing a better job, but she's still the same person that could be a tad reactionary as a player.
Right. So anyway, like I said, has nothing to do with why Jeff lost in this case. It was just an interesting thing that happened that had me scratching my head.
Okay. Are you ready to go to rule number two? Scheme and plot too much. Don't do it.
That's right. That's right. And you mentioned already that, you know, this was why you thought he was in danger just coming into the season. But we really didn't see any indication that he was doing it so far. But that reputation, it follows you, and it's hard to get rid of. And I think it hurt him particularly here. Zeke told Jeff that he was trying to keep him around, but it wasn't looking good. Now, as another side note, it's not clear to me who Zeke was proposing would go out. The only other name we saw floated was Ozzy, and we know Zeke wanted to keep him around. So was there another name being discussed that we never saw? You know, I don't know who Zeke was thinking he'd get rid of instead of Jeff if he really did want to keep him. I don't know.
It would have to be Debbie if it was going to be anybody else.
Well, yeah, and that's the only thing I could come up with. So anyway, another side note there, but it was an interesting thing that may have also triggered Jeff into thinking, well, who else are they thinking of if he's protecting Ozzy? But anyway, you know, what Zeke said in one of the very few helpful web confessionals this week, because by the way, web confessionals, I never want to hear another one about pizza again. Mm-hmm. Whether you got it, whether you didn't get it, way too many web confessionals about pizza. So CBS, if you're listening, just remember that going forward.
Okay, so but David anyway, Bloomberg says no more confessionals about pizza.
Exactly. But anyway, so one of the helpful ones was Zeke saying that he needs to keep Ozzy for a couple votes until he can get together with a group he really trusts. He wanted to keep Jeff, but Jeff would too easily flip at the merge. And then it would also involve Jeff's other allies and get complicated. So it didn't make sense for him to do that. The key to all of that, of course, is what he said about how Jeff would act after the merge. And it took me back to Second Chance once again. When Jeff was voted out in his previous season, he worked hard on trying to convince Tasha, Savage, and Abby Maria to keep him, but he just couldn't get the job done. That sounds familiar. I mm-hmm. feel like I've seen that very recently here. You know, at the time, I noted that it's actually less of a risk to keep someone unpredictable like an Abby Maria than to keep Jeff because of the number of times he had switched alliances. Now, there was no Abby Maria this time. I mean, there's a Debbie, but there's no Abby Maria. But Jeff still carried that reputation for being unpredictable and potentially jumping alliances. Last time he was on, I said that Jeff's excessive scheming and plotting made him the preferable target for Tasha and Savage to go after. This season, he was also the preferable target for pretty much the whole tribe.
David, rule number three is to be flexible. How did Varner do with that this season?
I would say he followed this rule throughout the game. He was on the majority side of the vote every time he went to tribal council until the Sandra vote, obviously. And as I mentioned earlier, I think he would have joined in there if he had been given the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that his flexibility is one of his strengths. I mean, if you go back to that first tribal council back in Survivor Cambodia, where is he one of the beach people? Is he one of the shelter people? He has both sides sort of like lobbying for him to join them. In this season, he talks about Tony and Sandra are at each other's throats and he's loving it. So he does like to sort of sit in that middle ground and then ultimately side with whoever's going to be the winner. And sometimes they become the winner by him siding with them.
Right. But there was one time that I think he could have been more flexible, and that was as he was nearing the end of his time there. Even then, I'm not 100% sure it would have mattered, but when Jeff was talking to Sarah, she asked if he had his eye on a particular yes. person or wanted to let others decide. He specifically mentioned Ozzy. And while Ozzy, you know, there's a good reason to target Ozzy. He, you know, he's a good one to mention. I do think that Jeff should have gone the Sandra direction and just said anyone but me. It would have shown Sarah and anyone else that he was willing to work with them toward whatever goals they had in mind.
Well, also, just to build on that, I do think that probably the even stronger option is, what do you want to do, Sarah? I mean, that was her right. bugaboo back in Survivor Kagyan at the merge over that she had her person that she wanted to target, and Spencer and Tasha and Cass, and they weren't on the same page about that, where then Trish pulled Cass over and said, Cass, who do you want to get rid of tonight? Sarah. And of course, that's who ultimately did go home. So, you know, nobody was asking Sarah, I don't think, like, Sarah, what would you like to do? How can I be of service to you, Sarah?
Right. And that's what I mean. If he had seen that opportunity, it might have helped him. Now, as it happened, Sarah got on board with the Ozzy idea, so maybe that's the way she was leaning anyway. But, you know, obviously what she didn't know was that Zeke, Andrea, and Ozzy seemed to have that sub-alliance, and Zeke certainly wants to keep Ozzy around as a bigger threat. So they were able to talk Sarah off that Aussie ledge there.
I really wonder about her position also, because when she talked to Troy Zan and Troy Zan was like, yeah, let's do something. She's like, you know what? I don't want to stick with the four. That's boring. That's, you know, she's like, she's interested in hearing what he has to say. She's having conversations with Jeff Varner. So I think it is possible to imagine that she's not feeling great about this alliance with Aussie, Zeke, and Andrea that she's in.
Well, right. Especially now after her idea has been shot down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that whatever Jeff did here, since he was dealing with Sarah, it wouldn't have mattered. But who knows? I mean, maybe his attempt shouldn't have been to target Aussie or to make it seem like Zeke was untrustworthy. Maybe he should have figured out Sarah's the one on the outs here and gone back to, you know, if he found out that Aussie and Zeke have a secret sub-alliance, then go back to Aussie and Zeke and say, hey, Sarah's gunning for you.
Mm-hmm.
Turn the table that way. It doesn't seem that he saw that path as available, though.
Okay, David. Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Obviously, we do know Jeff Varner, very emotional person.
Yeah. I would say that in general, he was doing a good job of this until this episode, which is also what Jeff himself basically said in his day after video. You know, you go all the way back to the first week. He had a web confessional where he said he was very calm and relaxed compared to Second Chance, which was chaos. And I would agree that was the Jeff we saw, or really didn't see nearly as much of, I think in part because he was being calm and relaxed. He wasn't going crazy all over the place. You know, so this brings up the question, why did he lose control? And I would say it's not just because his game was about to end, but because, as he said also in his day after video, if he had made it past this episode, it would have been the farthest he'd ever made it. So he threw everything he had at it. But obviously, in doing so, he allowed his emotions to control him. Now, again, at that point, did it even matter? You know, he didn't lose because his emotions were spinning out of control. His emotions were spinning out of control because he knew he was going to lose.
You know, and hard to forget the really emotional outburst also from Survivor Cambodia, where we saw that he's like trying to like getting into it with Tasha. And he certainly had a lot of conflict coming out of that season. So that certainly is in his Survivor past. David, rule number five is pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Now, let's tribal council aside, how did Jeff Varner do with this?
I would say he generally did a good job throughout the game, tribal council aside.
Mm-hmm.
We know he formed bonds with Sandra and later Zeke. And, you know, indeed, his friendship with Zeke at the time was such that Zeke even did something he knew he shouldn't do, which was telling Jeff ahead of time that Jeff was getting voted out that week. Zeke said it in various confessionals. I know I shouldn't do this, but, and that was because they had formed that bond that, you know, Jeff had done a good job there. So once again, we have a similar situation, which was similar to the emotional situation. I think he did fine here until the point where it didn't matter to his game anymore anyway.
David, rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. How big of a threat was Varner considered by the other players at this point?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Jeff was playing a much calmer game this time around, which also meant he did not come off as being a threat. Even besides his behavior overall, I also noted that he was helping keep Sandra around because as long as she was there, she was more threatening than him, both in terms of being viewed as a game threat and also a threat to cause challenge losses because her being there meant that he was not the weakest, the beat shield again. I find this interesting because Zeke is playing a similar game. He's keeping bigger threats than himself in the game, at least for now. And in this case, it was actually better for Zeke to keep Aussie the threat around instead of Varner the non-threat. So, you know, the time that he decides I'm going to be less of a threat is the time when it actually might have helped him somewhat to be more of a threat. Although I think whoever you are, it's hard to be as much of a threat as Aussie.
Yes, certainly as we head into the merge. David, Rule number seven, you talk about voting out the weak and then the strong and then the weak and then the strong. Can you make any sense of this?
Well, like last week, we have a situation where they voted out probably the weakest challenge performer. So last week it was Sandra. This week it was Jeff. And, you know, he had essentially said so himself earlier in the season, which, as I've mentioned a couple times now, was one reason he wanted to keep Sandra around for as long as possible. But as was the case with Sandra last week, this was not the main reason that he was targeted. Yes, he fell into the category of one of the weak, but that wasn't why they voted him out. They made their decisions for other reasons that we've already discussed. So, yes, it's great that it goes along with the rule here. We've already discussed earlier in the season that a lot of the times it hasn't been going along with the rule. So good that it has been, but it wasn't really the reason that he was voted out.
David, after all of the momentum on social media this week, have you considered getting rid of rule number seven?
No.
Okay. All right. Maybe we might need a Twitter poll on that.
I think we're going to have a special 3-hour podcast where I go through and explain it to everyone.
That could be on reality TV wrap ups.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in terms of these appendices, do whatever it takes to get idols. We didn't see Jeff Varner look for an idol at any point. Even when he was on the ropes, really did not go out and look for an idol from what we saw.
Right, right. We fall prey to the same problem that the editors and producers give us, which is when they don't find an idol, we often don't see them looking for it, because there was a secret scene showing him looking for an idol, but all he found were goats.
Okay.
There were goats all over the place, he said. Also, in his day after video, he said he was constantly looking for an idol. He also mentioned it, I think, in at least some of his interviews. So, yeah, he did what he was supposed to do in terms of looking for idols, but he was just beaten to the punch by Idol Master Ty.
And then the other appendix is about the final tribal council, which we don't need to get into. So basically, there was a tribe swap. There was a pseudo pagonging going on. Which of those was more important for Jeff Varner losing?
You know, in his day after video, Jeff said that before this tribal council, he was playing the best game he'd played and was in a good spot till he drew the wrong buff. So that tribal swap comes in. And actually, if you go all the way back to a week one web confessional, he said he knew he could get screwed again by a swap. And that's where he did indeed find himself, on the bad end of this most recent swap. I said last week that, yeah, there was bad luck for Sandra, and that same thing applies to Jeff. But once again, players should expect that they're going to be on the wrong end at some point. He tried to work his way out of a bad position, but despite 6 days of attempts, he just couldn't get it to work. This group was not budging, and Jeff's own history of scheming and plotting too much didn't help matters. So then the question is why? And the answer is that despite Jeff being generally good at scheming and plotting, the other players had their own strategies going on. Jeff caught on to one of them, but he did it too late, and he couldn't overcome the longer-term bonds that had been formed. Sarah was willing to work with Jeff to vote out Ozzy, but Zeke and probably Andrea were not going to let that happen. So Zeke and Andrea, or some combination of all of them, held that alliance together. For Zeke in particular, Ozzy represents a meat shield and an ally who will trust him long enough for Zeke to maneuver into a good position for the endgame. But while Zeke wanted to help Jeff, he believed he just couldn't rely on Jeff to be loyal. So even with Sarah in Jeff's corner, there were too many on the tribe opposed to the idea of keeping Jeff rather than Ozzy. Jeff was outmaneuvered, and his reputation preceded him, and that is why Jeff lost.
Okay. All right, David. Why don't we look ahead and start to take another look at this merge coming up? I talked about it certainly with Antonio on the voicemail podcast, and then Josh and I discussed all the players heading into the merge. But have you given any thought to how this might shake out following the merge this week? And 2 hours.
2 hours. And I want to point out, for those of us who are counting episodes, the preview that I saw specifically says back-to-back episodes, not a 2-hour episode.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So keep that in mind. Well, you know, there's big controversy over this. So, but in any case, yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to project ahead, but I've obviously been thinking about it. And I do think that you hit the nail on the head when you said that there could be a Cold War between Ozzy and Brad.
Might get hot soon.
When you were on the voicemail.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, that's true. It might get hot real soon. So, you know, trying to look ahead, figure this all out. Brad said in a web confessional that he was aligned with Ozzy, but now sees he can't do that anymore. And he needs to let others know that he's not with Ozzy because Ozzy will be target number one and he doesn't want to be target number two. I suspect there are similar ideas going on in Ozzy's mind, or at least the minds of those who are aligned with Ozzy. And that will all especially be the case if Brad shows up with new allies like Aubrey. I think we agree, and you can certainly tell me if I'm wrong here, that Brad already has Sierra and Troyzan on his side.
Yeah.
Ceree mentioned in a web confessional that she is hoping to make inroads with Brad now that JT is gone. And she may still be concerned about Ozzy and vice versa, which may, again, help to push her towards Brad.
Mm-hmm.
On the Ozzy side, you know, clearly, especially after, you know, a half hour of discussing this, it's, Zeke and Andrea are with him. Debbie certainly seems a lot more likely to side with Ozzy over Brad. And so by my count, we have 5 on the Brad side, 4 on the Ozzy side, 4 up in the air. We already talked about Sarah and, you know, between what we saw with her eagerness and willingness to vote out Ozzy and what you mentioned about her not liking where she was and being willing to work with Troyzan, I'm going to say she'll probably side with Brad.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where Ty, Michaela, and Haley will end up. Ty, I would guess, will go in the Ozzy camp, but I'm not 100% sure. That could mean Michaela and Haley will be the swing votes. What are your thoughts on that?
No, that's basically the situation that I outlined with Antonia, where I feel like that Michaela and Haley are sort of like without a country. They are the swing votes, but I do feel like that they probably are more aligned with the Brad side of things in that they've never played with the Ozzy group.
Well, that's true. That's true. You know, the question is,
and have really no ties to that group either.
No, there's a tie on that group.
Okay.
Sorry. the question I'd say is, okay, yeah, Haley has been playing with Brad, but, you know, does she like being called Blue Eyes? Does she, you know, like the way she was treated?
I don't
with
know if
him?
That's really a slur, Blue Eyes.
No, but I mean
Frank Sinatra didn't mind it.
I mean, that's just a general, you know, my general way of saying, okay, did she enjoy playing with him or did he push her away?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, yeah, they have the experience, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's the way they'll go. Although, like you, I tend to think that is probably the way it will happen, because if I'm forced to guess, I do think Brad's group is going to come out on top. And with Ozzy being Ozzy, I don't think he'll make it out of this double episode alive.
Yeah, I feel like that this is very problematic for Ozzy. The one thing in his corner is that I feel like that he has a good field to go up against, that there's really not somebody who's his equal, but there's a few people that are standouts among this group, so he's really got to be on his game.
Right, and there's always the question of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it, I mean, and that's what I mean.
I mean, Ozzy did not do well with a puzzle in the final four of Survivor South Pacific, but I do believe over the course of his Survivor career, I think that he has been at least above average at putting puzzles together.
Yeah, but then he has to go up against the likes of Zeke, Andrea.
Yeah,
and
I just
Ceree.
Don't want the narrative to be, well, Ozzy can't do a puzzle because he's dumb.
No, no, no. I'm just saying that he is not automatically number one when it comes to a puzzle, where he is if there's anything involving water.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And, you know, there's going to be obviously 2 immunity challenges this episode, which means he has 2 possibilities of not winning. I don't think he can go on an immunity run that will keep him safe long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So then again, you know, maybe he convinces Ty to play an idol for him. Who knows?
So you're going to go with Ozzy?
Yeah, I'm going with Ozzy.
Just to keep it interesting, I will go with Andrea just because Ozzy can hold the fort for a couple of challenges and they got to vote out somebody. So again, we're just picking who goes out first here. She's another great challenge competitor and doesn't have a ton of ties to the other side. So I'll go with Andrea.
Yeah, you picked my second choice there. I am also very worried for Andrea in this situation. So honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if both Ozzy and Andrea end up going home.
Yeah, and things get complicated also because then you start to say, but does Ozzy have an idol? Is it possible that, I mean, Ozzy is somebody that you think very well could have an idol based on the fact that he's climbing trees and doing stuff like that. So he's always a good candidate. And then in terms of like, do you split the votes and you get into this tricky, if the vote is a tie, then it goes to Rocks automatically. So there may be some complications headed into this first vote after the merge.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, it could be, well, like you said, a Cold War because, you know, in the Cold War, you don't go after your actual target. You go after an ally. You fight your battles somewhere else.
By proxy.
So, yeah. Right. So maybe they don't go after Ozzy. They say, like we've seen many times before, okay, we're not going to go directly after Ozzy because he may have an idol. Let's go after Andrea or let's go after Zeke or, you know, someone else who is clearly on his side, but would be less likely to have an idol played on them. Then again, you do the double bluff and you go back at Ozzy because, oh, well, they're not expecting us to go directly at him. And then you just give up because you have no idea at that point.
Okay, David. Well, I'm ready for the merge. Are you?
I am ready for it, and it's coming whether we're ready or not.
It's around the corner. All right. So, of course, for all the coverage that you could possibly want on this week in Survivor, of course, in addition to all the podcasts that I've done, there are all of the blogs up on robhasawebsite.com. Dave, did you have a hashtag as well?
I think now is a good time to look forward instead of back. And so with our discussion of the Cold War, I'm thinking Cold War ahead.
Cold War ahead. Good. David, I'll take as many Cold Wars as possible. It's the hot wars that I worry about.
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. All right. So short and sweet, David, I think you said everything that needed to be said here today. Of course, we will be back next week with a double episode. So you'll be well rested to talk about why the next two survivors lost the game.
That's right. That's right. We'll balance it out then.
All right. Very good. Stephen Fishback and I are going to be back after the double episode this Wednesday night. So look for Know-It-Alls coming up at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time if you're watching live. Otherwise, we'll be in your podcast feed, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.